When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, survivalists, and welcome to the Crux True Survival Stories. We are your hosts, Casey McIntosh and Julie Henningsen, and today, Julie Henningsen is going to be leading our story. How's it going today, Julie?
Great, Casey. Thanks for the intro there. I've got an exciting story to share with you today. So for today's story, we're going to one of my favorite places, which also happens to be in my backyard, Yellowstone Park. So, Casey, you're up in northwest Montana near Glacier National Park, which is also one of my favorite places. And I'm down here in southwest Montana, right next to Yellowstone National Park, which is completely different terrain and known for different types of features and amenities. Yellowstone, one of the most popular national parks in the United States, is huge. It encompasses about 3,500 square miles. And that measurement makes it larger than Rhode Island and Delaware combined. So it's the size of two states or bigger. And one of the things that Yellowstone's most known for is its hydrothermal features. There's over 10,000 features like geysers, hot springs, mud pots, fumaroles. And I kind of had to look up the difference between all of those different thermal features. We've talked about fumaroles in this podcast on Mammoth Mountain in California. But just some background on these thermal features. So fumaroles and mud pots are unique because they have really low pH water. They're very acidic. So there are stories that you can find in Yellowstone of people getting injured in these fumarole or hot pot features, and they basically just dissolve in the acidic, I don't know if you call it water or acid, but yeah, just hot acid. Geysers and hot springs have a higher pH. A geyser is an intermittent hot spring where water tends to kind of spew out sporadically, sometimes predictably, like Old Faithful, probably the most popular geyser in Yellowstone.
The world.
We should say the world. Hot water and steam just spew out as it builds up. And a fumarole is a crack. In the surface of the earth that's connected to a heat source, a deep heat source. It doesn't have very much water that drains into it, so it's more like a cloud of steam. And the fumarole can emit steam and volcanic gases, carbon dioxide, which was at the nature of one of our stories we told, and also sulfur dioxide. So some slight differences, but over 10,000 hydrothermal features in Yellowstone, one of the things it's most known to. And that includes 500 active geysers, which makes up more than half the world's geysers. So really big concentration in Yellowstone.
Julie, do you know who the first non-Native American person was to theoretically see Yellowstone National Park?
I don't think I do know. Who was
it? I think it was John Coulter. He went there with a couple of Natives. Yes. And when he was coming back, he was telling all these people about it, and they thought he was absolutely off his rocker because no one had experienced anything like that before. So they were calling it Coulter's Hell.
Oh, I've heard that term before and had no idea where it came from. I think there's a ski run. In fact, there's a ski run called Coulter's Hell. That's where I've heard it.
Well, now you know. You know the background now.
Full circle on that. Full circle. Our old friend John Coulter surfaces again.
Yeah, he's a pretty incredible guy.
Yeah.
So, okay, two things I have to say before you get into this story is that my Aunt Mary works for Montana State University, and what she does is she studies the microbiome of these liquids in Yellowstone. That is what she does as a microbiologist, which is really interesting.
That is so interesting. Yeah.
Right?
What a great environment to work in. Can you imagine that's your day job, just going to Yellowstone every day and
getting samples.
See,
yeah. And the other thing that I think is interesting about the fact that you're bringing this up is that I just recently sat on an airplane next to someone who grew up near in Wyoming and was telling me all sorts of terrifying stories about the area and incidents that occurred by unknowing people, which I'm assuming is what you're going to about get into here. So anyway, I'm excited that you're going to tell this story because, I mean, literally this was about 2 weeks ago. She was telling me this stuff on the airplane and I was captivated. I was sitting on the edge of my seat as she was telling me some of these stories. So I'm really excited about this.
Well, she may have told you the story I'm about to share. It's an interesting one. It'll captivate you. Another kind of thing that Yellowstone's really known for is its diversity of wildlife. It has the largest concentration of mammals in the lower 48 states. There's 67 different species, large mammals, small mammals, all kinds of cool mammals. A lot of birds can be found in Yellowstone, archaeological sites, waterfalls, and hiking trails, over 1,000 miles of hiking trails. Such a big area. So yeah, really diverse landscape. High alpine lakes, popular skiing in the winter, snowmobiling, hiking, backpacking, horsepacking in the summer, a real playground. So we find ourselves in Yellowstone National Park, August 21st, 2000. There was a group of concession employees. There's a concession that runs all of the hospitality in Yellowstone and probably Glacier too, called Zantera. And every season they hire probably thousands of people to come run the hospitality services in Yellowstone. So a group of these mostly young people that come from places near and far had ventured out after work one evening, August 21st, 2000, to go swimming in a river called the Firehole River. And it's sort of near the lower geyser basin, which is where Old Faithful is in the park. So this group of friends went for a swim and it kind of got dark. And they found themselves in the dark, headed not a terribly long distance back towards where they were staying or towards their vehicles, which were close to where they were staying near the Old Faithful area. And they didn't have headlamps. It was a dark night. So they just had really poor visibility. So, and they were walking back sort of in groups. There was a group of three: Lance, Tyler, and Sarah, who thought they were jumping over just a little creek, a little stream in the trail. And in the darkness, it looks like we just need to take a little leap over this tiny little stream running across the trail and get to the other side and keep walking out. Well, little did they know that it wasn't a stream. It was actually the edge of a hot springs, of a geyser. And unknowingly, they jumped into Cavern Springs, which is a hot spring that contains water at 187 degrees. It's a large thermal feature, and they had fallen right into it, not realizing that they were standing on the edge of it.
They were leading the group. There were people behind them.
No, they had sort of broken away from the group. So they were kind of making their way back on their own. But the other members of the group were close by. And at the time, Lance and Taylor were both 18-year-old men. They were friends. They'd known each other since before that summer working in the park. And they were able to get out of the pool after they jumped in. They didn't go completely underwater, just sort of up to their neck. So their head never went underwater. And in one of the articles, Lance described, you know, he put his arms up on the edge of the pool and tried to pull himself out and sort of fell back in. But then on his second attempt, was able to pull himself out of the pool. And so was Taylor, who was not quite as badly burned, but still very badly burned. And unfortunately, their third friend who they were with, a 20-year-old named Sarah, was not able to pull herself out. And she went completely under. So she was head underwater. And just burned head to toe. So there were yells for help. They started calling out. Their friends heard them and came back. So now they've got a group of, you know, the people they were swimming with there to help them. Sarah was able to get out of the pool eventually. And the friends kind of helped transport Taylor and Lance back to their vehicles to get driven to Old Faithful, where they were met by the Yellowstone Park medics. They weren't able to transport Sarah as quickly or as easily. She was more badly burned. But eventually, about a half an hour later, rescuers came to her and were able to get her as transferred as well to the Yellowstone Park medics.
Did anyone stay with her while she was waiting?
Yes, friends stayed with her the whole time. Yeah.
Good.
They stayed with her and tried to help her as much as they could.
Oh, that was probably horrible. Can you imagine? Because there's not very much you can really do.
Yeah, not much you can do. And, you know, that hot water, 187 degrees, they describe kind of the flesh on these victims' body was sort of just like dripping off. It was burnt to the full thickness.
Oh, my gosh.
So emergency medical personnel were able to coordinate a logistically difficult transport and evacuation. They were flown by helicopter to West Yellowstone and then fixed wing aircraft to a burn center at Salt Lake City in Utah. And they all three made it to Salt Lake City, but Sarah sadly succumbed to her injuries pretty quickly after she arrived at the burn center and did not survive.
I hope that her family had the chance to at least say goodbye to her.
Yeah, it's unclear. It was a pretty rough, you know, period of hours, I think, between when the incident occurred and when she passed. She was from Washington, and just like Taylor and Lance was there to work for the summer. So once they arrived at Salt Lake City, it was determined that both Lance and Taylor had second and third degree burns over 95% of their body.
Ugh. Wow.
We used to refer to these as first degree, second degree, third degree burns. But now I think more commonly we would call that superficial, meaning first degree, partial thickness, second degree, and full thickness, third degree. So a little bit more descriptive terminology, help easier to remember. So instead of thinking like, okay, wait, what's worse, first degree or third degree? I can never remember. So that's kind of old terminology. But basically 95% of their bodies burnt completely through the epidermis into the dermis, the layer of skin below, and for full thickness into the tissue even below that, adipose, muscle, nerve, and potentially bone as well.
Oh, that, oh, just a horrifying thought.
Yeah, they weren't really expected to survive. It's rare that a person with burns that extensive would survive. So kind of miraculous that they made it this far.
They're probably what helped them out was not going fully under the water, you know, not having the faith exposed to that.
Yeah, their airway might have been preserved because of that. Right. And interestingly, what helped in their recovery, Casey, this is where it really gets interesting. But another reason why it helped that they didn't go completely underwater is that the doctors at the burn center were able to take pieces of skin, unburnt skin off of their scalps, and create skin grafts, grow skin grafts out of that healthy tissue, cultured epithelium, they called it, taken from these shavings from the scalp. They'd grow it in a test tube. They debride or remove the burnt skin off of their burns, temporarily replace it with cadaver skin just as a placeholder. And then after they grew this healthy skin made with their own cells, they'd place these new grafts over the burn area. Each graft was like the size of a playing card. So you can imagine if it's their, you know, 95% of their body surface area, tons and tons of these little grafts that they replace the burnt skin with.
Like a patchwork quilt. Like that's unbelievable. Quilt.
Yeah.
Never heard of anything like that before. That one of the earliest times that they had used that technology, or had it been used before that?
You know, I'm not sure about that, but I do know that the Salt Lake is convenient that the incident occurred somewhat near the Salt Lake City Burn Center, because that is one of the most high-tech or advanced burn clinics that I'm aware of. I'm sure they have access to all the latest and greatest. The pieces of skin that they eventually grafted actually were grown in a lab in Boston. So look, there was a collaborative effort to kind of undergo these procedures.
Can you imagine being the person that's in charge of growing the skin graft? You're like, what do you do for a living? Oh, I grow skin.
In a lab.
I grow skin in a lab.
I save lives.
Right. I wonder how long it takes to grow a skin graft the size of a playing card.
Well, I don't know, but they were surprisingly in this burn center for only about 2 months. They kind of were released from the burn center care after 2 months. I mean, not that that is a short period of time. And during that time, it sounds like the therapy and the rehab that they went through as part of their recovery was pretty brutal. They would kind of have to be stood up and stretched to keep their skin from contracting and using equipment to like hold them in stretched positions, daily sessions of passive movement of their limbs. They would be placed in chairs that over periods of hours would slowly lift them from a seated to standing position, suffered a lot of muscle atrophy over that time. Lance, who weighed 180 pounds before the accident, lost 51 pounds during the two-month hospital stay.
Wow.
A combination of muscle wasting and just pure inactivity.
What a terrible time in life for this to happen to you, because, you know, you just graduated high school. This is the beginning of your future. And this is the way that it starts, with such a horrific beginning.
Yeah. The only silver lining to that is that Lance and Taylor knew each other, as I mentioned, before this happened. And they were side by side throughout this entire recovery, to the extent that there was a period of time that, you know, they couldn't talk or move or do anything, but they could sort of look at each other across the room and maybe wave their fingers. So, you know, at least they had each other, and that might have made it feel a little bit less isolating for each of them.
Yeah, I can imagine that that experience would be so much more horrific if you were going through it by yourself.
Right.
Because one in your surrounding, like none of your family members, none of your friends are going to understand what that experience is like.
Exactly. So after the first, you know, couple months of their recovery, they were discharged to head home and continue this, you know, probably years-long rehabilitation process from home. Their doctor, Dr. Jeff Safley, who's the director of the Intermountain Burn Center at the University Hospital in Salt Lake City, was quoted as saying, "When the patients were admitted, I thought they had no more than a 30 to 40% chance of surviving." He said, "These are the two largest burns I've seen that have survived. When the boys took their first steps in late October, the entire burn unit staff showed up to cheer them on. Everybody was literally crying, and both families were totally overwhelmed."
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, an incredible survival story. Yeah, so Lance and Taylor are just a couple of, you know, survivors. It's pretty amazing. Lance's family did bring a lawsuit against the Yellowstone concessioners, you know, suggesting that there wasn't good staff training or a good warning about these hazards. Because, you know, this is not the first time or the last time something like this has happened to park concession employees. But the lawsuit was thrown out, and he had over $1 million in medical bills, which, you know, will probably only increase over his lifetime that he was left with. And on that note, pretty interestingly, more recently in July 2017, another Xanterra Park employee, a 21-year-old male, fell into a hot spring in the same area, flown to Salt Lake City, suffering burns up to his waist. So not quite as severe, but kind of same story, same location. So there's a lot of ways to die in Yellowstone. And the park kind of has a reputation for being a place where, you know, deaths occur. And they do. But when you look at the numbers, it's not really that many deaths. Statistically, deaths in the park are actually pretty infrequent, maybe one or two per year out of over a half a million visits. It's a busy, busy park. And people die from these thermal injuries, falling into geysers, purposefully getting into geysers, just not understanding the risk.
Purposefully approaching wild animals such as buffalo on the road.
Yeah, wildlife, bear mauling, car accidents, falling off cliffs. You know, there are people who appear to believe that, you know, national parks are these carefully controlled amusement park environments that are curated for their entertainment, and not fully understanding the risk of what's out there when you're spending time in nature. So some of these incidences are preventable, and then others are just pure accidents that happen in natural places. But there have been 23 documented hot spring deaths in Yellowstone's history, and a strong probability of two additional ones where body was never recovered. one of those strong probabilities took place in 2023. A man went missing in Yellowstone, and a park visitor reported seeing a shoe floating in a hot pool, a hot pot. And when they retrieved the shoe, there was a foot in it. And they were able to use some DNA matching to determine that it was this missing person. So he had must have fallen into one of these acidic hot pots.
And his foot was spared, because you would think that if the rest of him was dissolving, it would have also dissolved his shoe.
Well, I don't know if you've heard of this phenomenon, Casey. I heard about this not long ago, and I'm no expert on it. But apparently, this is a thing where shoes these days are made of such, you know, bomber, high-tech, synthetic materials that they don't break down, they don't degrade, they don't, I mean, they just stick around. So when people, you know, fall off a ship in the ocean or end up, you know, getting attacked by a shark or whatever it might be, their foot remains protected in these really high-end shoes. And there's a phenomenon where feet wash up on the beach. It's not uncommon to find a shoe with a foot in it, preserved by the shoe.
That is so crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Can you imagine being the person who found the shoe with a foot inside of it?
No. Yeah. And I guess it happens kind of regularly, but not in Yellowstone, but just around bodies of water where bad things happen. And the only evidence left to tell a story is a foot or a shoe filled foot. The only evidence left to tell the story is a foot-filled shoe.
That sounds like a Dr. Seuss line.
Yeah. Think about that when you're going to fall asleep tonight. So, great survival story for Lance and Taylor. And unfortunate for their coworker, Sarah, who lost her life in this incident. But hey, you know, if you ever go to Yellowstone, adhere to the signage and all of the warnings to stay away from these thermal features.
Yeah. And also don't wander around in the dark around thermal features. That would be a good rule to follow.
And don't try and get a selfie with a bison.
Don't do that. No, not a good idea. They're not as nice as they look from the car.
Yeah.
I promise. Did you ever hear about what happened to these two after years after the story?
No, you know, so that was 24 years ago. So yeah, I don't know what they're up to today. I'm assuming they're alive and well. Kind of the prognosis at that time is that eventually they'd get back to some semblance of their previous life and go on and do all the things they wanted to do. So I sure hope that that is what happened for them.
If I find any information, I could bring it up at a future episode.
Yeah, good.
Now,
we would like to once again ask for your support in spreading the word about the Crux True Survival Stories. If you've enjoyed the episode today, visit our Instagram page at The Crux Podcast. Share our latest posts on your stories and help us reach more fellow survival enthusiasts and storytellers. If you have any stories that you'd like to share with us, send us an email at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and share your story. Thank you for your support. We are always striving to bring you stories that entertain and resonate. Your tuning in means a lot to us. We're grateful for your continued engagement. Wishing you a fantastic week.
Yeah, have a great week, Julie. And everyone else.
Thanks, Casey.
Yeah.